Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another exciting adventure here on Southern Sense. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with my debonair, my sophisticated, my intellectual, my oh-so-handsome co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Well, good afternoon, Annie. Good afternoon, everybody, listening on Blog Talk as well as Kinetic Hi-Fi. Great to be here. Friday, April the 4th, and always a pleasure to be with the future star of whatever that show is, George Stephanopoulos has. Annie's going to have that show someday. So it's great to be here with our future star of Good Morning America, Good Morning Sundays, or whatever. But good to be here, and really excited to have Kevin Freeman here.
Kevin Freeman, yeah. You have to pardon me. Skype just now, in the last few minutes, kicked me off twice in the few minutes that you were just talking. I cannot believe it. This is last weekend and this week and today. Well, Kevin Freeman is going to be joining us at quarter after the hour.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited. You know, since you mentioned he was coming, I kind of reviewed game plan the best that I could. But really, like... Some of these authors that we've had, well, authors in general, have a really unique perspective of and in depth on certain aspects. Now, this, of course, is going to be cyber economics, but it's really there's a lot of questions to ask. And you know, I never really realized how many ways there are to read books nowadays. Not just from your phone and the Kindle, but I mean, there's just, man, someday you're going to be able to lay down and go to bed at night, and the book will be like reading in your brain.
Oh no, please. We got enough of the NSA, you know, violating our privacy. We don't need them in our heads now. Good Lord. Oh, may that never happen. Well, I want to welcome everyone that's in the chat room. And just to be a little humorous, because Mike is always accusing me of finding these off-the-wall things, I posted a picture up in the chat room. So just click on that Facebook link, and don't blame me. I just came across it, decided to repost it. So, I mean,
Don't blame me. I just don't accuse me. I just drove the getaway car, in other words. I just drove the getaway car.
You know, I really did wish I had that picture on Tuesday when we had Jeff on. It would have fallen perfectly into what we were talking about. I am so mean. I am so cruel. Oh, man, I make me laugh. Anyway, I want to welcome everyone in the chat room. We see we got Catgirl joining us and hope everyone else will join us soon. Anyone that listens to the show knows that we do a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication goes out to a Staff Sergeant Thomas A. Basor, Jr. of Milton. He died on September 26, 2013 in Afghanistan. Staff Sergeant Thomas A. Basor, Jr. was born October 21, 1981 in Shamokin, and is the son of Thomas A. Basor, Sr. of Milton and Sandra L. Benfer Hackingbird of Winfield. Thomas married Jamie L. Basor, who survives, on October 2, 2007, and they celebrated 6 years of marriage together. He was a graduate of the Milton Area High School class of 2000. He joined the Army of June 2001 and was stationed at Camp Ederel in Italy, where he had various assignments, including vehicle driver, rifleman, automatic rifleman, and fire team leader. He was also assigned to the Harrisburg Recruiting Battalion in Harrisburg as a recruiter. His current assignment was to Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 506th Infantry Regiment, 4th Brigade Combat Team, 101st Airborne Division, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, as a squad leader. This was Thomas's third deployment. His first was in March of 2003 to Iraq, the second in 2005 to Afghanistan. During his military career, Thomas received numerous awards, including 3 Army Commendation Medals, 5 Army Achievement Medals, 1 Valorous United Award, 1 Army Superior Unit Award, 4 Army Good Conduct Medals, 1 National Defense Service Medal, 3 Afghanistan Campaign Medals, 1 Iraq Campaign Medal with Arrowhead, 1 Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, 2 Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Development Ribbons, 1 Army Servant Service Ribbon, 1 NATO Defense Medal, U.S. Army Basic Recruiter Badge Gold with 3-star Sapphires, 1 Combat Infantry Badge, 1 Expert Infantry Badge, 1 Assault Air Assault Badge, 1 Parachutist Badge, Parachutist Badge with Distinguished Device, Bronze Service Star, 1 Expert Marksmanship Badge. In addition to these awards, Thomas was also awarded a Bronze Star and Purple Heart for his ultimate sacrifice to his country. He was a member of the First Baptist Church in Milton. He enjoyed motorcycles, guns, his BMW, snowboarding in the Alps, traveling with his love for the Army. Most of all, he enjoyed spending time with his son, playing cars, planes, and helicopters. In addition to his parents and wife, Jamie, Thomas is survived by his 5-year-old son, Darren J. Basor, and 3 sisters, Angela, Jennifer, and Deanna. A gathering of family and friends was held on October 5th at the First Baptist Church. It was followed by memorial service. Military honors were performed by the Milton American Legion following the service. He will be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. We dedicate this show to Army Sergeant Thomas A. Basor. We dedicate it to all of the men and women who have served, who are serving, and will serve. And we dedicate to them this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. We can never say thank you enough to the military and to our first responders. God bless.
I fall. for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. Oh, when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the fire. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt,
Herndon. And we're having a little bit of a problem with our phones today. Skype's been misbehaving on my end, so I'm hoping that I stay on and don't get kicked off again, since they already kicked me off twice in the first 5 minutes of the show. Anyway, my co-host just had to duck out for a moment to take a phone call, and we're waiting for our guest to call, and he should be calling in very, very shortly. I came across a couple of items just before going on the air, and I live here in the great state of South Carolina. And as soon as I came across this, I must have shot out about maybe three or four messages to Governor Haley's office with a WWTF. Right here in South Carolina, our state funds two of the colleges, Clemson University and the University of South Carolina. And I came across this symposium 2014. It's called Bodies of Knowledge Symposium 2014. And the Bodies of Knowledge Symposium 6 is going to be held at the university April 10th to the 11th. And many of the speakers and performers are focusing on various ways of being, now catch this, I did not make this up, I cannot possibly ever even come close to thinking this up, focusing on various ways of being LGBTQ. For those who don't know what that stands for, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transvestite, and what the heck Q is. That's something new. If anyone knows what the heck the Q stands for, let me know. It will kick off Thursday with a talk on being trans, but not like you think. And then Friday will be lectures by an author on how to be gay. And co-founder of GLQ, a Journal of Gay and Lesbian Studies, and an author of Pray the Gay Away, is going to be talking. And there's going to be a performer there who for an hour and a half is going to do a routine on how you can become a lesbian in 10 days. Oh, thank you, Joe Queer. Wow. Now, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? We are paying, our tax dollars are paying for our students. And now you got to remember, South Carolina is a very red state. And how the heck this slipped past and ended up on the curriculum and the scheduling, I would like to know. Because I don't want my tax dollars to go out there to teach young women going to college, they're supposed to be going to college to better themselves, to learn how to be a lesbian in 10 days. So just before I got on the air, I was firing off to Nikki Haley's office and her staff left and right, and they have not heard the end of this from me. And this will be going out to all members of my Tea Party group going, do you know where your tax dollars are going? And I do believe this might be my guest calling in. And good afternoon, area code 817. You're on the air with Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to?
Kevin Freeman.
Hi, Kevin. That's what I thought. I wasn't sure if it was your number or not. I actually lost my co-host for a few minutes. He's taking a call from American Prosperity. He's so important. He has to leave me to the wayside. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Annie?
I don't know if you caught part of my rant just before I brought you on, but this came across minutes before going on the air. The state of South Carolina, our tax dollars, is paying for the University of South Carolina to have a symposium, a Bodies of Knowledge symposium, to teach the LGBTQ way.
LGBT what?
LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transvestite, queer. How to be gay.
So the tax dollars are spent trying to indoctrinate America's youth into alternative lifestyle, so to speak.
How politely you said that. I could think of other ways to say it, not so politely. But yeah.
That's what parents are obviously wanting to send their children to higher education for, not.
Can they think of anything crazier? And this is in a deeply red state?
Yes, it boggles the imagination. It truly does. It truly does. For years we've been taught that this isn't something that you learn, behavior. For years we've been told that this is how you're born. But now apparently they want to spend tax dollars to violate what they told us forever and say, no, we want to make them, and this is how we do it. So.
Yeah, and one of the speakers happens to be a comedian or whatever she's supposed to be, and she has them trapped for an hour and a half, and she's got a monologue routine that she does on teaching you how to be a lesbian within 10 days.
It's a joke, right?
Nope. I'm serious. It is up on the college website. I pulled this directly off the college website.
One might question why such activity would even require 10 days. It just boggles the mind, doesn't it?
I don't know, but I'm going to end up with an answer one way or another from Nikki Haley's office. I'm telling you that. I flashed out a whole mess of emails, and I have her phone number, and I'm going to be calling up there as soon as I get off the air and find out how the heck they have allowed this to happen.
Well, it's reminiscent of the lesbian pornography teacher on the West Coast that was tearing down pro-life banners and assaulting people. And, no one would have imagined that except some bright young student caught it on videotape and documented. So there's some case that, in that regard. It is a battle for the soul of America that's taking place. And, when we trace it back, a lot of these ideas of the left – have come from think tanks in the Soviet Union, in the former Soviet Union, that said, hey, you know, we could destroy American society if we destroy the family, if we destroy traditional values, if we destroy the church, and so forth. And, you know, that's well documented that that was the intended plan, and now we're seeing the strategy being properly executed.
Yeah, you know, we had on a member of the English Defense League on our last show, and he was talking about how they're fighting against Sharia law coming into the English law, which it has already crept into, and other things that are going on. They're trying to prevent the total radical Islamization of England. And one thing that went through my mind, I remember there was a couple of protests recently. I think it was in the Midwest somewhere. I forget where. But it had Muslims joining hand in hand with the gay community. And I thought, now that is a really weird pairing. But if you think from the standpoint you just mentioned, it's a way to destroy us, because once they destroy us, then they can go after the gay community and say, all right, this is an abomination. We helped you get rid of all those nasty conservatives and get rid of the Republicans, so now it's our turn to get rid of you. And it's just a matter of tumbling.
To prove your point, I was watching the so-called Arab Spring in Egypt, and I was watching as a reporter interviewed a lesbian couple that was demanding that Mubarak must go. And the reporter asked, now, who are you working with to see this? We're working with the Muslim Brotherhood. They're so helpful in organizing, and they're so beneficial in organizing. And, of course, immediately following the Muslim Brotherhood takeover, there was dramatic persecution of alternative lifestyles. And anyone who was in any way in opposition to the Sharia law, which homosexuality clearly is a violation of Sharia law. So that proves your point. As soon as they got rid of the dictator, they were demanding or they were then enforcing their will. And, you know, I sat there watching just speechless, thinking, you'll get killed. Why are you doing this? I mean, so that just proves your point that the left is a strange collection of individuals that have varying anti-traditional American attitudes, much of which was funded by the former Soviet Union and thought up. And unfortunately, on the right, we look for any minor differences to disassociate ourselves. And that's the right. We segment into our own little groups. Not so under Reagan. Reagan pulled together national defense conservatives, economic conservatives, and social conservatives. But certainly the past several election cycles, we've distanced those three groups. And my research indicates why precisely we need to bring the three groups back together, because the national defense conservatives need to wake up. Frank Gaffney would agree with me on this, and realize that the economy is directly tied to our national security. And in fact, that's the new battleground. And social conservatives should realize that it's important that we have a strong national defense. It's important that we have a strong economy to support that national defense. And then the national security folks need to realize that the moral underpinnings of America are what hold us together and bind us as a people. And we've got to hold to the traditional values in order to be a strong nation, and so forth. So it all connects together, but we're watching the left pick us off one at a time.
You're absolutely right. We've got to remind everyone it's not a single issue anymore. And if you wrap it all around, number one, adhering to the Constitution, and number two, looking at it through a dollar and cents, an economic viewpoint, we can solve any and every issue that we face, whether it's social, whether it's economic, whether it's security. Just simply look at it that way. Does it adhere to the Constitution, and is it economically feasible?
Absolutely, and that addresses all three throughout the document. It's an economics document. It is a national security document, and it is a document describing how society should interact with one another, built on Judeo-Christian values.
Yeah. Now, for people that don't know you, Kevin, give us a little bit of your background so people understand
Sure.
who I'm speaking to.
Yeah, and I appreciate you having me on. I am an investment manager out of Texas. In 2008, uncovered evidence that there were malicious attacks on our economy, and particularly our stock market at the time. I was hired by the Pentagon and wrote a formal research paper that documented all of this. Initially, people, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. But as with the NSA, people used to say, oh, if you think they're listening to your phone call, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Over time, it's proven that I was right. There's even been admissions recently from the Treasury Secretary of the United States. Yes, Russia attempted to crash our economy in 2008 using our financial markets. And I well documented that there were attempts out of the Middle East, sovereign wealth funds and others, to crash our stock market. There were hacking attempts. And all of this because our enemies are aware that if they bring down America's economy, people will panic. And when they do so, they'll do a lot of things, giving up security, giving up their freedoms and so forth, moving away from the Constitution. And that's turned out to be correct since the 2008 collapse. But most of America is unaware that that 2008 collapse, at least in part, was caused by enemies as an attack on the United States, not unlike a Pearl Harbor attack. And so I've done that research. I've published it in the New York Times bestselling book called Secret Weapon that came out in 2012, and then by demand wrote another book titled Game Plan, which came out this year, and that's how to protect yourself from the coming cyber economic attack, what you can do about it, and what our nation can do to protect us, because we are one mouse click from a financial hacking terrorist away from being pushed back 100 or 150 years in lifestyle. It would end with the death of many Americans if our economy collapsed or there were an EMP attack or any of these other things. And they're not far-fetched. In fact, our enemies are planning them even now.
Yeah, it's amazing because I met you several years ago when you had just come out with Secret Weapon, and that was at the Tea Party convention up in Myrtle Beach. I think that was, what, 2011? I forget.
2012 is when that book came out.
Oh, 2012, okay. I've been to so many of my – I'm lucky if I remember which city I'm sitting in right now. But I was fascinated by the book, and I had you on shortly right after that. And then I saw you just this past January when you came out with a new book, and I walked up to you yelling at you because you didn't call me and let me know the book was out. But I was fascinated when I was reading this. I'm going, yes, everything you wrote about in the first book has come to pass. And now as I was reading your book and saying a lot of this stuff is now going on. And I remembered back to doing an interview with Gordon Chang, and he was talking about the Chinese economy imploding. And we were talking about the corruption in the government and these huge cities that were being built just for the sake of building them that were lying empty. But what you're writing is about China is from a different perspective, and I'm trying to marry the two, but I'm having a hard time. You know, which
sure.
viewpoint?
Gordon and I are actually friends, and we exchange information. Just recently, Frank Gaffney had us in an exchange of information. I would agree with him that China is built out these cities, and they have serious credit problems. There are even rumors that as many as half of new car loans go unpaid because the people take out the car and that after a year they decide they want a new car, so they drop the keys back at the dealership. But they are still sitting on $4 trillion almost of foreign currency reserves. They still have a demographic problems. They have a lot of peasants working for a dollar a day. But they have 100 million people in their middle class, and they expect to add 300 million. So they're in a race to build the cities and then move the people off the farms into the cities and build domestic consumption. At the same time, they hold the trigger on over $1.5 trillion worth of American debt, which is approaching 10% of our outstanding debt, and it's a much larger percentage of the outstanding debt held outside the American people, outside our Federal Reserve and so forth. And it's significant. It's enough to crater our economy if they were to dump it. They don't want to dump it because they want the American economy to hold up long enough for them to get out of their problems and move forward. I don't know if they'll be able to do that or not. But what Gordon and I agree on to the end degree is that the PLA, the People's Liberation Army in China, is not a benevolent force, that they are a very radicalized anti-American force. They have a lot of access to the purse strings, and if China is wounded economically, why not then, if you've got a wounded animal, backed into a corner, they will give everything they've got in the fight. And so why, at that point, if they really are in as deep of economic trouble as Gordon believes, they may be prepared to lash out in ways that we could not expect. And really, the only hope for America is we hope their economy is going strong, that they love us, that they want to work with us. So either if you believe wholeheartedly in what Gordon says or you believe wholeheartedly in what I say, there's a serious risk that they will not be a good economic partner, but a geopolitical economic enemy of the United States. And I think we agree fully on that.
Now, I was reading something while doing my research, and forgive me, I didn't print it out. I normally print it out, everything. But I was looking at a map of the United States, and there was little red dots for everything that the Chinese own here in the United States and the locations of them in comparison to areas where they, should there be an all-out war, where they would nuke certain areas compared to areas that they would prefer to have their people settle in should there be an invasion. And I was absolutely fascinated at, and the United States was like basically covered, especially along the coastlines, with these dots. They know where all our water reservoirs are. They know where all the underground aquifers are. They're buying up port facilities. They're buying up major installations. And I said, oh, my goodness. It's no longer, you know, made in America. It's now made in Chinese America.
Well, they're buying real estate like crazy. In fact, I saw an article on that, which I did copy, the amount of real estate that they're purchasing now. And then you look and realize that they have better information than we do because they have hacked so many systems. For example, I was at a national defense seminar this week, and comes to me an individual who says, I have pictures of their stealth fire and our stealth fire. I'm going to send them to you because if you layer one on top of the other, they're identical. And he was right. They've stolen our stealth technology. They've stolen and hacked our, the head of IT for the state of Texas told me at one point that he is certain there is a better copy of the Texas driver's license database in Beijing than there is in Austin. Yeah. And that gives you an idea how sophisticated they are. And then this pool of information. They have their NSA, version of the NSA, but they're not hacking to protect the citizens' security. They're hacking to gain useful information to give to industry and to the military. So I have no doubt. I don't know that they have any intention of invading the United States. I think it's more likely that they intend to buy us. But they do want to hold the weapons they have and use against us to prevent us from defending Taiwan. And that's a clearly stated objective. This is not a nation that is a friend of the United States. They have aspirations. We stand in the way in some of them, and we're helpful and useful in others, like when we guard copper mines in Afghanistan that they own. So it is a very complicated thing, but my point is we're in a global economic war. We don't know it. They know it. And that puts us at a serious disadvantage. And the reason I wrote my books is to wake people up because their portfolios, their investments are at a disadvantage. Where do you invest? And our nation is at a disadvantage because we're unaware of what's going on.
Yeah, I have up on our show page the link to your site where people can get both books, which is secretweapon.org. And I've been typing it up in the chat room for people to click on also. The book is, I'm telling you, it is a must-read, and I intend to, I think you have it up on Amazon also, so I'm going to go over there and do a review for you after the show. But it was 5 years ago you went public with all this information. But what have we done, our nation done, to protect ourselves?
Unfortunately, very little. In fact, we've put ourselves at greater risk just by not listening to common sense, the Constitution, the Tea Party, and so forth. When I first started my research, the United States had about $9.5 to $10 trillion in total debt. It is now almost $18 trillion. Every dollar that's out there is a weapon, a bullet that can be fired back at us at some point. So we've made ourselves more vulnerable from a cyber standpoint because we've not created a national cyber response to all the hacking, partly because the NSA has been tied up in all of the scandals and so forth. General Keith Alexander was on 60 Minutes. He was the head of the NSA. On December 15th, said, make no mistake, a foreign national has the capacity to bring down our financial system. And then it was reiterated by another NSA employee in the same interview. You know, when you think of the flash crash, you think of the stock market, you think of how dependent we are. When the stock market crashes, how much that impacts the real economy. It has a wealth effect so that people no longer have the money that they thought that they had. Or a bank goes under and they wipe out accounts over $100,000. And things like that, the impact on our nation would be so severe if that happened that it could be a sovereignty-ending event. In 2008, Representative Paul Kanjorski admitted that there was an electronic run on the banks with $500 billion pulled out of our money market system. He said that if it continued for about 24 hours, that the United States would have ceased to exist as a nation. That's how deep the depression would have been and the panic would have been. ATMs would have stopped working. Credit cards would have stopped working. We know they have the ability to hack targets' credit cards, but they also have hacked the NSA, the NASDAQ, the Navy systems. We are at great risk from a cyber standpoint. We're at great risk from a debt standpoint. We're at great risk from a financial market standpoint. And unfortunately, we have not taken any of the real steps that we could take. And there are some easy ones that I outlined in the book, easy ones, again, that the Constitution would recommend and that the Tea Party, I believe, would endorse.
Well, listening to you, a lot of things are flashing back of things that people I've interviewed over the past couple of years, and one of them was an author, Chet Nagel, and he was talking about an EMP attack, electronic magnetic pulse, which is basically setting off a nuclear bomb up in our atmosphere. Just high enough where it doesn't touch ground, but enough where it knocks out every piece of electrical equipment. And that it happens to be something that's very real. I think it was 2 years ago, Iran did a test run of one of its nuclear submarines to see how close to our coastline they can get. That's launching distance for them.
Oh, there's no doubt. They could put a barge in the Gulf of Mexico. North Korea could put a barge in the Gulf of Mexico. They have the missile capabilities. They just have to fly up above the stratus, up in the atmosphere, to the proper height. They have to do it over the continental United States, and they only need a very crude nuclear device, something not different from what we used in the 1945 in Hiroshima or Nagasaki. I mean, it doesn't have to be sophisticated, and we built those devices with slide rules. So there's no doubt they have the ability to build such device. They've access now to the nuclear material in North Korea for certain, and probably in Iran, and if not now, soon. They could very, unfortunately, they could very easily accomplish that. And there are very sophisticated nuclear EMP weapons that the Russians and the Chinese have developed, and if they've shared them in any way, and we know from intelligence that they've shared them with North Korea, yes, that could happen, and it could wipe out our power grid, and it also is a sovereignty-ending event. And I covered this in Game Plan. What do you do if this were to happen? You know, it's written in a book, which is nice because there won't be Kindles at that point or websites to look at. Hopefully you'll have a copy of the book. You pull it out and say, what do I do now? And hopefully you read it early enough that you followed some of the good advice. And it can happen even without a nation state attempting to harm us, because there's something called a coronal mass ejection that comes from the sun. It's a solar flare. If it hits at the right time in the right way, and the sun is constantly sending these off, it creates what we call now a Carrington event. It was named after an astronomer who noticed the sun getting dark spots on it that were sending out flares in 1859, and he also noticed, you know, shortly thereafter, telegraph offices were catching fire because the electric pulse hit the telegraph lines, went to the telegraph offices, caused them to burst into flames. Then it moved the aurora borealis down so far south that miners in Colorado were being awakened in the middle of the night thinking it was dawn. it changed the charged the atmosphere so much that the telegraph lines that were still there were able to transmit messages without any power being added to them for days. It really is a powerful thing. It can happen naturally, according to Lloyd's of London. Every 150 years to 200 years, we'll have one of these massive surges. The difference is, in 1859, there were no computers to fry. There was no electric grid to collapse. Today, there is. And we could fix it for not much money. All we have to do is put essentially massive surge protectors on our transformers. But we haven't spent the money on that. Instead, we dig tunnels under highways so turtles can pass safely across the highway.
It is. It's amazing. And when you think about, you know, survival, and you see now all these people coming up with these survival things, and you wonder, well, is this, you know, just some way to get me to separate from my money, or is it something you really should be looking at? I know that when we moved here to South Carolina, because we're prone to, you know, hurricanes, and I knew that the power company wasn't the greatest and we had constant outages, I insisted on having a generator. And I said, if the power goes down, God forbid, you know, we do want an emergency generator, something simple, something as simple as that. And I said, you know, always have a couple of tanks of propane gas, because if, you know, you lose your power, at least you can still cook, or even keep bags of charcoal, and you can always throw the charcoal in the grill anyway and still cook. You know, simple survival techniques that people don't think about.
And water, much more essential is water. A gallon per person per day for consumption, and a gallon per person per day for sanitation, for keeping things clean, washing, and so forth. So 2 gallons a person a day. If you've got a family of four, that's 8 gallons a day. 2 weeks supply would be a minimum. That would at least get you the opportunity to look at alternatives and options. But people don't do that, and they do in other countries. They don't do it here. So these are simple things I laid out in the book, and that's not going, and I use the term hesitantly, but I use it because, those crazy preppers. That's not going crazy prepper. Crazy prepper, you need much more than that, but at least it's a start. My respect, as I've done this research, for preppers has gone up dramatically. It used to be a funny show you watch on one of the cable channels, you know, about these crazy preppers. But as I've done this research and realized the number of threats and the simple things that we could do to at least allow some level of protection from them, and we're not doing them. We live so arrogantly in this nation, and it would make perfect sense to have a little food, a little water, a little fuel. But if the power goes out, you know, and you've got a gasoline-run generator, where do you get the gasoline? You go to the pump, and there's no gasoline there because it's runs their electric pumps that pump it to the gas station. And we could require, as a nation, that's one thing that maybe not a nation, maybe at the state level, they ought to say, if you're going to have a gasoline franchise and we're going to collect the taxes from you, we would like you to put a manual pump where you can get gasoline out of your tanks in case the power's out. It wouldn't be that expensive, wouldn't be that difficult to do, and it would be something that would be highly beneficial for society. Or the free market could do it and just say, hey, we encourage you to do it because if there's a power outage or something, then you're going to want that. You're going to be the only one selling gasoline on the street. So whatever we do, we need to prepare somewhat.
Yeah, we do. And I actually had started looking into the solar powered generators. You know, at least, you know, if you can't get the gasoline, at least you can still have power somehow or other. So it's something I'm trying to convince my husband into doing, and which I think I'm almost getting there, almost. But, you know, you think about, you said people here are arrogant. You think about how many people out there that are listening in don't know how to cook a meal from scratch, you know, making bread, something as simple as that, you know, unless it's, you know, in the package on the shelf or it's in a box and everything's already mixed in there. They don't know what to do.
Or growing vegetables.
Yeah, and growing vegetables is a big thing. Now, I fortunately, you know, I do a lot of my own jarring of stuff, and I enjoy cooking from scratch. I don't like box mixes because, you know, it tastes funny to me. It doesn't taste natural. But it's something like that. Or even making your own clothing, God forbid, you know.
Yeah.
All these.
Oh, these are useful skills that we used to teach regularly, but now in our just-in-time society, you know, I'll just hop in the car, I'll drive to the store, I'll pick up what I want, or I'll click order it from Amazon, and it'll be at my door. Well, if the power grid goes down, none of those will work.
Exactly.
And we are stronger as a society and less likely to be attacked with an EMP if we have defenses in place, because then they know that the retaliation will be far worse than the damage they can inflict on us. And so people will back off and not attack us. And that's really how we won the Cold War, was mutually assured destruction and the ability to outspend our enemy.
Yeah. Now, we have some questions that have been coming up in the chat room. I'm not ignoring these guys. We were talking about the Chinese and everything else, and how other nations have been attacking us. And one of the questions, if I can't seem to scroll down, but I'll try to paraphrase it, was mentioning how the Obama administration is looking now to sell part of the Internet, that ICANN part, the part that gives you the domain name. Why should we be afraid of that?
Well, it feels an awful, and I'm not an expert on ICANN, although a friend of mine was the head of it for a while. But what it feels like is the Internet is something that we built that enables commerce, and we built it and shared it with the world freely, openly. And now that it has now become used by the world, we want to then give to the world control over it, and this is the first step. It feels an awful lot like the Panama Canal. Something we built with American blood and treasure and freely shared with the world. And then the world, we decided to give it to the world, and the Chinese came and bought it. And essentially they own the management of it. And it's a parallel. We did that under the Carter administration with Panama, and we're doing it with the Internet under the, you know, if anything, Al Gore should be up in arms. I mean, he invented it. Why would he allow us to give it away?
You know, people are saying, oh, it's only the domain, whoever controls the domain names. But you think about it and you say, well, why should that be a big deal? Well, if they take away domain names and they restrict you on what you can and cannot have, then they're going to be restricting your ability to access or use the Internet. I mean, I may not have the name for my show, Southern Sense. Anything to deal with Tea Party or conservative may not have access then to building a site.
That's the most valuable real estate.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And if you control the domain names and you can dictate, then you can say, you know what, you're not politically correct. You said something against the LGBT movement earlier in the program. We need to take that away from you just to teach you a lesson. And you know, they just took a CEO's job away from him because he made a donation to Prop 8 in California, you know, 8 years ago or whenever that was, and they say, oh, he needs to be fired because he does not reflect the values of the company. Well, the United Nations controls ICANN, and they could say that because you don't own the domain name. You are a renter of the real estate for a period, and you have to pay your fees every year, and the fees could get exorbitant. So, yes, there is a problem with giving that to the international community. But technically, I'm not the expert on how ICANN operates. But the authority should remain with the nation that developed the Internet.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that CEO. I actually pulled the article up because I was reading it. Brendan Eich was his name, and it was a 2008 donation. Now, this is the chief executive of Mozilla. Now, I actually happen to use Firefox and Mozilla. And when I saw this last night, I said, oh, my goodness. I've got four different computers now. I'm going to be going onto four different computers and removing them from all the computers. And anyone that's got Mozilla, they ended up canning this guy because he made a donation to a conservative group.
Years ago. You know, it reminds me. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
It reminds me of the chef that, you know, used the wrong word 20 years ago and got fired for it. You know, the political correctness, the idea, or here in Texas where we have the Senate candidate who was running back for SMU, and he mentioned when he ran for Senate that he believed that marriage was between one man and one woman, which happens to be Texas law, and Fox Sports had hired him. And the Human Resources Department fired him before he even started. And Kelly Shackelford at the Liberty Institute, Liberty Legal, is defending him because he spoke at a Texas primary for a Texas Senate race and said he endorsed the law that was on the books in the state of Texas that says that marriage is between one man and one woman. And we can't have those kind of values at the Fox Sports desk, was basically what was said. So, on the other hand, we conservatives continue to support groups that that have outspoken opinions that we disagree with, you know, from a commerce standpoint, and we don't demand that they're firing. We're on defense all the time. I'm not suggesting that conservatives should go on offense or not. I'm just saying the hypocrisy that's prevalent today, you know, we're no longer allowed to have our own opinion. You can have your own opinion as long as it belongs to the left, and then you're welcome to have that opinion, period.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank God I'm no longer working, because I probably would have been fired from every job I ever had if I kept on speaking out the way I am now. So I don't have to worry about it. And the other person said, can't imagine me keeping my mouth shut. Are you going to say, Mike? Oh, man.
Annie, now, that's one of these things where back in your day it wasn't politically correct. Today it certainly wouldn't. But actually, Ann, just so our host knows, as I was dialing back in, the lady from our local library called me and said, got any books? And I'm like, yeah, I got one for you. And I right on his link had the ISBN number or whatever that is called. So that was great. It's on order in, here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the ISBN number. So we're going to have it here in the Grand Rapids Public School Library here in Michigan. So, and I'll be the first to check it out. And let me ask Kevin a couple questions. Number one is, why are we so complacent about all these alerts hitting us in the face? I mean, whereas China and Russia, I mean, these countries are at cyber war, obviously. Secondly, I even remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, where the Chinese stole some of our missile, how to put together some of our missiles. It just seems like we as people are so, the politicians are afraid of China, and it seems like we as a people are just so, complacent. I'll throw that out there and let you respond.
Well, the answer to the first question, why are we so complacent, is a term called normalcy bias. It has become a normal belief that America has won the Cold War. We're the only superpower on the planet. Our economy is the strongest in the world. The dollar is therefore always permanent and never going to go away. And whenever we see anything that runs contrary to that normal belief, it creates a cognitive dissonance that prevents us from actually recognizing the truth. And when you Google the term normalcy bias, and I got into a discussion with a gentleman just a few weeks ago where this is not going to happen. He just arguing, don't confuse me with the facts. I'm certain it's not going to happen. I asked him to Google it, and he happened to be a Jewish gentleman. I said, sir, I really want you to look at that, because the case study for normalcy bias were those Jewish men and women in Germany, Nazi Germany, who said, he can't hurt us. We're too important to the economy. There's no way that our friends would turn against us. This isn't going to happen. We don't. The ones who saw what was happening and had their eyes open, they fled, and they're alive today. And the ones who did not were rounded up and put into camps, and many of them were tragically killed. And that normalcy bias is the reason why they could sit there day after day. It's like the frog in the kettle with the water getting hotter moment by moment until it boils to death. So the answer, why are we so complacent, is because we believe that we're the sole superpower of the world. Nobody could ever move against us. They'd be stupid to do that. In terms of China, why we're concerned about China, but the American people don't seem to be concerned, there is an active effort by the Chinese of information warfare in this nation to convince us that China is our friend and not our enemy. They need us more than we need them, and so forth. And this information operation in the past week, I've been with two individuals, both who've come up to me and, you don't understand. China, there's not a communist left in China, was the word that I was told. And the second one is they love Christians. China is a very Christian country, and they're opening up. And I said, what about my friends at Open Doors or Voice of the Martyrs? Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. I've been to China. I know more. This gentleman said, I know more about China than any person you've ever met, which I thought was a strong statement because I met the top defense experts on China in the Pentagon. I've met Gordon Chang, of course. I've met a number of business leaders and so forth, and the top investors in China, and I know most of them fairly well. And I said, well, that's really amazing that you tell me that China is a Christian country and they're not communist. And then I met another gentleman who had a much more sober view of China, and he shares just facts on the ground, like if you're a Chinese individual and you mess up, they will try you, convict you, and shoot you within a week if you do something that damages the reputation of the state. It's controlled by communists. They may not be ideologically pure Marxists, but they are the Communist Party. And other things, like the one-child policy, they have literally slaughtered a huge percentage of their baby girls because families want sons, not daughters. And if you can only have one child, then you kill the daughter. So this does not sound like a Christian country. This does not sound like a freedom-loving country. And yet those are the facts on the ground. They spend enormous amounts of money trying to convince us otherwise. And they've brought a lot of American citizens into their country and shown them enough evidence to convince them that they're not a threat, and it's a propaganda effort.
That it is. It's just a huge, huge propaganda effort. And we had Vanessa Felter on. She's a gospel singer who does a lot of her work over in China, and she was telling us that if you think that there are a lot of Christian churches, yeah, well, they have the ones the government runs and the ones that are open to the Europeans or outsiders. And the ones that are open to outsiders does not allow a native-born Chinese in there. And they actually have people that stand there at the door, and if one of them tries to enter, they will usher the person out. Because if the government finds a native-born Chinese in these other churches that are run by outsiders, by the Europeans, Americans, or whatever they are, they will close that church down.
Doesn't sound like a freedom-loving Christian nation, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Another thing I was hearing is that now because there are such a demand for boys being born and girls are in such small numbers, they're having a hard time keeping these young men happy because there's not enough women to go around.
Yes, well, then I guess they need to take that 10-day course. I don't know what they're going to do with that. It's a terribly detrimental thing. It lends itself to massive societal disruption, and boys that don't have girls don't tend to be socialized to the same degree, and it becomes a more warlike society. So it's frightening, and I feel for them, and yet there is an explosion in underground churches in China. Maybe we'll wake up one day and the last two communists will look at each other and say, well, I'm a Christian, I'm a Christian too, and the country will be won over. That's certainly my prayer, and we should be praying for that nation. It's an important nation, and they're brilliant people, and they have a powerful culture that deserves respect. But the current statist nature is not conducive to China's long-term development, nor is it conducive to a long-term good partner for the United States of America.
Your book, Game Plan, which people can get at secretweapon.org, the link is up in the chat room and on the show page. I urge everyone to take a look at it. You mentioned there's so much in your book. I mean, we can do a 12-hour show on this book alone. I'm telling you, there's just so much in there. But you have a acronym that you use in the book throughout the book, BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. What is BRICS, and why is it important to us?
BRICS is a term that was coined by Goldman Sachs financial analyst referencing Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Originally, it was just BRIC, B-R-I-C-K. But unbeknownst to most people is it was actually a Putin idea or construct that was developed even prior to the Goldman Sachs analyst. And it was designed to build an economic bloc between Brazil, Russia, India, and China, with the intention that among those four nations, they have the economic wherewithal to withstand or stand against the Western economic system. And those economies grew more rapidly than our economy did for a good period. And so Goldman Sachs noticed and others, and they started investing in those economies because of the growth. And so it became an investment trend. So you buy BRIC countries. They added South Africa a couple of years ago, and there's only one thing that South Africa adds to the mix. They're not a fast-growing economy like the rest of them have been at times. They really don't fit otherwise, except they have the world's largest gold reserves in the ground. And when you add that in, Putin has been pushing the BRICS nations to undermine the dollar, to conduct trade outside of the United States dollar, with the idea of upending the world economic system. And in fact, he's even proposed that those nations form their own international monetary fund, their own world bank, to compete against the Western systems. And right now, he's pushing for them to develop their own credit card capabilities. So, and he repeatedly tells us, Putin says, don't push me too far, because I can always go to my neighbors in the south and work, coordinate with them, he means China and India, and we can build an economic bloc that will no longer need you, America. And that is all of that I put on my blog post, which you can access the blog from secretweapon.org. There's a blog tab. The blog is globaleconomicwarfare.com. But that's the BRICS nations. It was intended as an alternative to the Western financial system. It was developed by Putin. It became an investment trend so that we were literally financing and investing in those countries with the idea from Putin's standpoint that they would create an alternative to us. So it's a scary thing. Brazil and India are presumed allies of the United States, but at some point they will be faced with the same question that China posed to Australia. China said, you need a godfather. It will either be China or the United States. We suggest you choose China because we have more to offer in the region. And when those kind of conversations can be held with English-speaking Australia, you know that they've held those conversations with English-speaking India as well.
Absolutely. And Putin is hip-deep in this economic warfare with us. In fact, it was his pal, his fellow KGB, Igor Panarin, that predicted that if they succeed in this economic warfare against us, they will end up breaking up the United States into six separate countries. Are we really heading down that road? Is that possible?
You know, what's amazing is Panarin said that in a conference first, in a conference in Linz, Austria, in 1998 to a delegation of 600 people, and he was laughed at because he called the American debt a Ponzi scheme or a pyramid scheme, American foreign debt. At the time, Alan Greenspan came out to Congress and said we would have all our debt paid off by the year 2010, and Panarin said we would have a pyramid scheme ready to collapse by the year 2010. Panarin seemed to know better than Greenspan. Why? Panarin was speaking from KGB doctrine written in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, which said that if Russia needed to, Soviet Union would accommodate the world and pretend like they'd become capitalists and democratic and friendly, and we'd have an era of global democratic peace. And that would be used to rebuild Russia's economy. And during that, we would lull America into thinking we were allies and friends. And then when the time was right, we would strike the United States using external economic weapons, and our goal would be to disrupt the election in such a way that the Americans would panic and elect the progressive candidate. This was written in a book by Jan Schena, a Soviet defector, in 1982. Now think about what happened in 2008. We know Russia attempted to crash our economy by dumping Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It was confirmed by the Treasury Secretary of the United States just a couple of weeks ago in an interview with the BBC. Russia tried to use an external economic weapon. They did it in the summer of 2008, right around the Summer Olympics. It created the social and economic conditions in the United States that we elected the progressive candidate. And the progressive candidate was designed to be one who would take us down a path that would make it easier for the Russians to confront us economically directly in the future. All of that has happened exactly as Panarin said, and he said it in 1998, and in 2008, 10 years later, we saw the plan being executed, and we're seeing the plan continue to be executed even today.
It gives us an interesting take when you think back that at one point President Obama, then not a president, went and visited Russia on, what was it, a congressional or a senatorial visit?
I don't know. I know the hot mic thing that happened with Medvedev Putin was back in power. He was interviewed and he had a hot mic and he didn't realize it. And he said, tell Mr. Putin that I will have more flexibility after my next election.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. when you add that all up, and I'm not suggesting that President Obama is working with Putin now. What I am suggesting is that he's the kind of candidate that Putin would want to have seen in office. He wouldn't want, certainly wouldn't want John McCain, who's we ought to be fighting, sending in tanks and so forth into Ukraine and fight right now. I mean, that would not be the candidate he would have wanted elected. He wouldn't wanted Sarah Palin elected, who warned that Putin was going to invade in Ukraine. He wouldn't have wanted that. What he would have wanted is the progressive candidate who wasn't ready for the 3 a.m. wake-up call, according to Hillary Clinton. That's the one he wanted. And the fact that happened in the fall of 2008, right before the election, and that's the gist of the book Secret Weapon, and it's been proven to have been correct.
Well, now I'm telling people they've got to read both books, read Secret Weapon and then pick up Game Plan, because it'll really knock your socks off. You know, there's a lot of us out here that are living on fixed incomes, whether you're retired or whatever. How do we protect ourselves if we don't have huge savings accounts and we're relying on whether it's a pension or a disability? What do we do, the little guy?
You know, and that is the gist of the book Game Plan. And the reason it's got the title Game Plan, and really the fair criticism of it is I don't give you a pat answer, this is what you do, this solves all the problems, because there is no one easy answer. You know, so there'll be Goldline and others that will say, buy gold, and I'll agree with them. Gold is better than paper. If you've got to have a challenge, but you can't put everything you own into gold, because then you can't function, you can't pay your electric bill with gold, you cannot pay your cell phone bill, you can't buy a cup of coffee with gold. But it preserves assets if the dollar collapses. But what happens if we go into a deflation because the banking system collapses? Paper dollars at some point are valuable. So the answer is you really have to diversify, and you have to be prepared, as a football team has to prepare for an offense that can run sometimes and pass other times and sometimes has trick plays. You've got to prepare right now. What happens if we go to a hyperinflation? What happens if we go to a deflation? What happens if there's an EMP? And so the book walks through all of the scenarios and said, if this happens, then you do this. But what it doesn't say is, this is exactly what's going to happen, and this is exactly what you do about it. So let's just take one example, a cyber attack that wipes out the banking system, at least temporarily. One practical thing you do is you keep paper copies of your statements, because you may have to prove that you had money in the bank. Let's say it's a hyperinflation situation and the dollar collapses because the Chinese dump dollars joined by the Russians and others. What do you do there? Well, you better hope you have some foreign currencies or you have things that hold real value. Gold holds real value. Silver holds real value. Land holds real value, but none of those are very liquid. Certain stocks in the stock market, and I say this as the Dow is off, 100 and Right now the Dow is off, down 169 points, and the S&P 500 is off 25 points. But the stock market in a currency collapse, if you have the right stocks, actually is a good store of value, and it's liquid and you can get out of it. It doesn't work, though, if they've done a flash crash. So there's no pat answer. The only thing that you can do if you're on a fixed income, if you have investments, is to diversify your investments. You need to see what expenses you can cut and be prepared. If this happens, these are the three expenses I'm going to cut first. And be prepared so that you don't just panic. The worst thing you can do is face your economic difficulties in a panic and not know what to do. You have an action plan put in place with steps, practical steps that you can do, just like you should have food and water and so forth. It's not fun, but it may mean that you have to give up some luxuries that you would love to have, but it's something that's necessary in the modern world that we're facing. We're not facing a roaring 20s environment or a go-go 80s environment where you can go out and be aggressive and so forth. We're facing a time in which you need to look at capital preservation. You know, 5 years ago I'd have told you put whatever you can in the stock market because stocks are dirt cheap. They're no longer dirt cheap. In fact, today a company went public with a $2 billion market cap called Grubhub that delivers food from restaurants. Most people listening have probably never even used the service. Many may have never heard of it, but all of a sudden they just produced a $2 billion market cap. These are not cheap times for the stock market. But if we have a hyperinflation, stocks are good. So you've got to balance all of those things. The best thing to do is to get educated. That's why I wrote the book Game Plan. And if you don't want to buy it, hopefully I got notice of two libraries today that had just bought the book, one of them on your program. And go ask your library to carry it, and you can get it. It won't cost you anything, and some of them will even check out the Kindle version to you.
Why follow-up on there, why the lack of complacency, okay, from the politicians? Are they just being paid off? It just seems like they're helping to contribute to these problems.
Again, I go back, I think it's normalcy bias and an information operation done by China and the Middle East. You know, if I could prove to you that there were Muslim Brotherhood in the administration and having access to classified information, it would probably alarm you. Yet if I out the names, as Louis Gohmert and Michelle Bachmann and a few others did, and I out the names, then the politicians come and jump on you and say, that's crazy, you shouldn't talk about that. And a perfect example is, just think of the smoke surrounding this. The deputy chief of staff to the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, it was Huma Abedin. Huma has family history with ties that can be fairly reasonably shown to be connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. And I'm not saying she personally is involved, but all that Louis Gohmert was asking was that she be investigated. We also know she's married to Joe Wiener, who was the politician who was disgraced from the tweeting pictures of himself and so forth and had to resign, and then he ran for mayor and just got, you know, laughed.
Oh, Anthony Wiener. Yeah.
Anthony Wiener. Yes, Anthony Wiener. And that's who she was married to. And then you add to that the idea that apparently she was going around pretending to be the deputy chief of staff after she'd gone to a part-time position, carrying her card, and then selling her consulting services during that time period. No one's ever investigated this, and when Michelle Bachmann and Louis Gohmert brought it up, the Republican leadership blasted them and said, you can't question her patriotism.
Well, yes, we can.
If that's, she's the deputy chief of staff to the Secretary of State and there's all this smoke surrounding all these issues, then we have a duty and responsibility. It's a dereliction of duty to not question her loyalty. That's what getting clearances and being properly vetted is all about. That's our job to do that.
Well, every time you mention the Muslim Brotherhood, I just see red. And matter of fact, last night some poor guy ended up getting a whole blasting earful from me because we've got the senatorial race coming up here in South Carolina, and Lindsey Graham has 8 challengers on the Republican ticket. And, of course, his camp made the mistake of calling my house. They called a couple of weeks ago, and I gave the poor guy, you know, an earful. But this guy, again, decides to call and says, we've got a little survey, and, oh, man, I started it on this poor guy, and I said, I think, you know, you get the idea of where I'm coming from.
Yes, and what we have is we have a group of politicians. They raise money repeatedly. There are Muslim Brotherhood front groups in the United States that fund candidates. There are Chinese front groups that fund candidates. I spoke at the Heritage Foundation. There was a gentleman that came up to me and handed me his business card. It was written in Chinese on the back. It was English. He was attached to a university here. And I asked him, I said, is there anything that I said about China that's wrong? He said, no, but nobody's going to listen to you. And I said, so are you connected to the Chinese government? He said, I couldn't be here if I weren't. And I said, so are you connected to the PLA? And he just smiled. And, you know, the information operation, it only works because we're so arrogant. But it is very effective at deterring us. I'm not saying Chinese citizens are bad. In fact, I think that they're wonderful people. I'm not saying anything about any individual, but there are groups whose purpose, like the Muslim Brotherhood, is to sabotage our own house from within, basically, and we have documents from federal court cases that prove that. It's a matter of federal law. And, you know, I'm not saying that the average Muslim who's worshiping is evil or bad. I'm not saying any of that. But there are known groups that are seditious with intention. We know that. Al-Qaeda proved that. And it's politically correct to accuse Al-Qaeda, and it wasn't politically correct to accuse the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, the Director of National Intelligence, Clapper, said that they were a largely secular group. Well, now in Egypt, they're not considered a largely secular group. They're considered public enemy number one, and they're being executed for being part of the Muslim Brotherhood. So, you know, it's not me saying this. It is they themselves have set themselves as enemies of the United States, and it's not me doing some McCarthy-style witch hunt at all. I'm just saying we need to open our eyes and open our ears and be aware that there are groups that have seditious purposes in the United States. The KGB had infiltrated. Chinese intelligence is infiltrated. We caught Russian spies. You know, Anna Chapman was among them. There are groups here, and we need to be aware that there are those who have intentions to do us harm. And my primary message is they want to do us harm economically. It's an economic war. That's the new form of warfare. And whether it's radical Islamic groups, that was bin Laden. That's what he said his intention was. The current head of Al-Qaeda, in his last speech, Zawahiri said that we've got to remove the dollar as reserve currency of the world. And in the Al-Qaeda timeline, the current timeline, they call it Time for Economic and Electronic Warfare Against America. This is a document that was found by a Pakistani journalist in 2005. After a meeting with bin Laden, who handed in the document, starting in the 2010 to 2013 time frame, they were going to start the Arab uprisings and economic warfare against the United States. So, you know, this isn't me making this up. This is their stated intention, and it's all documented in the book Game Plan, and even more so in Secret Weapon. But Game Plan has a What You Can Do About It section.
Yeah, now what is really scary, because when you talk about how much influence China has now over us and our economy, I was watching a video that popped up on YouTube, and it was a gentleman from GM, one of the CEOs, and he was addressing a group of Chinese. And what amazed me was he was bragging that 7 out of 10 cars GM produces is made now in China. 7 out of 10. And the only major section of GM that is still remaining in the United States is research and development. Everything else has been moved over to China. And then when you looked at the ties that GM has to the PLA and other government officials, GM is now Chinese government owned.
And yet we bailed them out. We put taxpayer money to make sure that they would be able to be a Chinese company. And research and development here, absolutely, that's how they'd prefer it. Take our best ideas and then translate them and transfer them to China. And again, China can be a great partner of the United States. China, there are great business people. China has a vested interest in seeing our success, but not all Chinese believe the same way. And the PLA is a serious issue and problem, and not all the PLA, but there are some in the senior leadership of the PLA that want to destroy the American economy so China can take its rightful place in the world. So the best thing that we can do is be educated, not make generalist statements in terms of China's our friend, and therefore we need to realize it's much more complicated than that, and the willingness of the head of GM to admit that, just shows how duped the American people have become.
Absolutely. And then you also throw in the new CEO who was testifying before Congress about that ignition part, and you're wondering, well, if the Chinese government doesn't care all that much about the individual people, why would they care about us? And it was that arrogance that allowed that part to be, a 59-cent part that could have been replaced? It was the Chinese government arrogance. They said, oh, don't worry. See, what, you kill a couple, American civilians, no big deal. And this is what we're facing.
It's different culture. It's a different respect for life in that sense. And yet, unfortunately, that attitude is permeated into our healthcare system. Again, you started off, you said the truth. We can solve everything if we go back to the Constitution. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If we go back to the general ideas, basically, government should be limited. Government should be to protect the individual, not to protect the government. Provide for the common defense. To promote interstate commerce. These are the key critical things that the Constitution addresses, and then give as much freedom as possible, and the American people will develop the strongest, best nation on earth because it's a great system. And anytime you go away from that as a people, as we've done, to where people don't have the right to worship God as they so choose, they don't have the right to express their opinion, they get fired for holding a politically incorrect belief. Those are the things that bring down and destroy our country, and those are the things that the KGB and others planned for us 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Absolutely. Now, we've had a fellow BTR host sitting here listening in patiently. Let me see if we'd like to add a comment. Thomas, you're on the air with Kevin Freeman. Thomas, you with us?
Yes, I guess I'm here now. You hear me now?
Yes, I got you, baby.
Sorry, I was talking and I had my cell phone mute, so hate it when that happens. Hey, Kevin, I was listening to what you were saying, and one of the things that I find interesting, just because with how China has positioned themselves, Russia and all this stuff, but my question for you is, has anyone considered the fact what there are those of us who are still in our intelligence community, I mean those who are still working on our behalf, who haven't sold out to the current administration, are you saying that we no longer have any type of systematic protections in the place? Because what I believe, and this is just a personal opinion, that if China collapses our economy, even if they do, even if they go to a foreign currency, they're going to collapse their own economy. So I guess my question is it justified to believe that the United States has no protection whatsoever from an economic standpoint against Russia, China, Brazil, Venezuela, and whoever else? We have no protection. That's a
great question. The sole protection that we have is what you described, and that is that the blowback would be dangerous. It would hurt Russia. It would hurt China seriously. Now, number one, we war game. First off, Panarin that we mentioned earlier, Igor Panarin, in his presentation, said he believed that Russia and China would ultimately emerge stronger from the turmoil. And if you have a 25-year time frame, which the Chinese often do, they might be willing to do it. They haven't been willing yet, but they might be willing to, and they're working rapidly to diminish their dependence on the United States. So that is something that they're headed to. But secondly, our arrogance is such that we know that they depend on us, and so therefore we assume that they never will do it, and that has prevented us from putting measures in place to protect ourselves. There is no genuine protective mechanism other than the awareness that it would hurt them too, therefore they're not likely to do it. But I want to point out that in the 1950s, to an ally, not to an enemy, the British and French looked at the Suez Canal and said, we built it, why should Nasser and the Egyptians have it? We're going to take it back. And they were preparing militarily to take control of the Suez Canal. President Eisenhower and the United States government said, no, we're not going to let you do it. Basically, they said, what, are you going to shoot at your allies? You're not going to do that. And they said, no, we won't shoot at you. But we have a bunch of British debt that we hold. Why don't we dump our British debt or at least stop buying it, knowing full well that there would have been blowback on the United States at the time because the British currency was one of the reserve currencies of the world, and we depended on a good cooperative relationship with the Brits, and it was our access to help rebuild Europe was through London. And they realized, though, that we were serious enough that caused them to back off. What if China says, hey, we don't want to dump the debt, but if we have to, we will. And by the way, we're going to invade Taiwan. And if you try and interfere with us, we will dump the debt because having Taiwan would be worth the $1.5 trillion we would throw away of American debt. It would be worth more than that to us. What would we do then? It's a weapon. Whether it would be effective or not, I don't know, but it's a weapon, and it's a threat that they have and something they hold over our heads, and we've let them have that.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the Soviets and the Chinese, their elite echelon don't care about the guy at the bottom of the totem pole, so they're willing to do that. So they have no qualms about dumping on the economy. Kevin, we're down to our last 2.5 minutes, and it has been fascinating.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you so much.
And the book is at secretweapon.org, and I'm telling everyone to go out and get this book. It should be on every person's shelf. And, Kevin, I want you back again. You know that.
You've got the publicist number, and you've got my direct email. So, you know, I actually noticed the tweet that you sent out today, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I retweeted it from my account.
Yeah, what I've also done too is there's our county library. They're coming up with a millage, and they're worried that I'm going to fight them on it. So I just emailed the lady who's in charge there, and I said, "Do you happen to have this book on order?" And she says, "Why, yes, we have it on order. So you're going to get two books." I said Monday or Tuesday they'll order them. So
that's great. Thank you.
Well, you know what? That's a good book. But anyway, thank you for joining us, Annie.
Yep, and I want everyone to know that we will be back here again on Tuesday. And Tuesday's guest is going to be from Ayn Rand, Don Watkins, and our candidate for Lieutenant Governor Micah Childs. So until Tuesday, see you then.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Good night, and God bless.
God bless.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. American. straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American.